to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Skylar Jeremias. On today's episode, we're diving into the critical issue of cost-related non-adherence in biologic treatments and how biosimilars are delivering on the savings they promised. Despite 68 biosimilars approved by the FDA, they still make up only 2% to 3% of the U.S. biologics market. And market share ranges greatly between individual markets, between 8% and 82%. But here's the thing. Biosimilars are delivering on promised savings 10 years in. Data from the Association of Accessible Medicines show that generics and biosimilars have already saved the U.S. a combined $445 billion by the end of 2023. In fact, biosimilars alone saved $12.4 billion in 2023, bringing the total savings to $36 billion since their introduction in 2015. But barriers do remain. With many biologics scheduled to come off patent in the next decade, having no biosimilars in development. So how can issues like cost-related non-adherence be addressed, and how can artificial intelligence help streamline the prescribing process and increase biosimilar utilization in hopes of encouraging companies to continue investing in this evolving space? Today, I'm joined by Josh Canavan, head of pharmacy at RazorMetrics, to talk about why, despite these massive savings, biosimilars still account for only 23% of the overall biologics market. We'll explore how AI-powered tools are helping physicians make the switch to biosimilars easier, ensuring patients get access to life-saving treatments at a fraction of the cost. The landscape is changing fast, and as we mark the anniversary of the first biosimilar approval, it's time to discuss how automation, policy changes, and greater adoption can close the affordability gap and bring these life-changing treatments to more patients. Josh, welcome to the show. To start us off, how does cost-related non-adherence affect patients' ability to access necessary biologic treatments, and how could biosimilars help reduce these barriers?
I think there are multiple barriers that affect medication adherence. One of the most important ones that we can influence is around patient cost. So we know biosimilars are expensive to bring to the market, and we know some of that cost is going to get passed on, unfortunately, to the patients. There's a recent Harvard Medical School survey that shows around 20% of patients are non-adherent. And of that 20%, some of those are resorting to extreme measures, such as going into debt or sacrificing basic needs just to be able to afford their medications. One of the things I want to do as a pharmacist is reduce the amount the patient has to pay so that we can ensure they go home with the medication and they're adherent just like their prescriber wants them to be. Switching to a biosimilar right now is the best way that we can reduce patient costs. And helping to remove the barriers that we see to biosimilar adoption, which we'll talk a little bit about later, is a great way to improve the cost-related non-adherence.
AI-powered prescription tools are emerging as a solution to help physicians seamlessly switch patients to biosimilars. What does the ideal AI-driven system look like, and how can it overcome the reluctance among healthcare providers to trust automated systems for clinical decision-making?
Right now, the AI-based prescribing decision support tools is a very interesting area. It's pretty new, since AI is pretty new, and the tools around it are being built out, investigated. And so it's a great time to discuss what those prescribing tools could look like utilizing AI. One of the issues we have right now with real-time benefit tools is that they're not widely adopted, they're not widely utilized, and even when prescribers are given an alternative that could potentially save money, they're not likely to select it. And so there's another study out of University of Colorado recently that shows the vast majority of prescribers stick to their original medication, even when being shown an alternative that might save money. So there has to be some distrust there among prescribers that what they're seeing may not be correct. Maybe it's not saving money. Maybe they have experience with past RTBT tools that didn't work real well. So if we're designing an AI-based system that's ideal, you would want it to be as accurate as possible. So AI can improve the accuracy of some of these recommendations so that the prescriber knows this is up to date. This is something that will save money, hopefully even for the patient, because prescribers are particularly likely to make a switch if it saves money for the patient. And once you build confidence in the prescriber that these are the correct ones and they see their patients saving money and they're getting feedback from their patients that tell them all of this, then it will start to be adopted even more and more. And the last step, it has to be within the provider's workflow. So how can we utilize AI within the existing workflow of the prescriber to improve this without making them go to a separate app or log into an AI system that gives them recommendations? That's not going to be adopted. So if you can put all of these things together, I think that tool would be really successful.
With biosimilars offering an average of 50% cost savings, how do you foresee the widespread adoption of biosimilars impacting not just affordability, but long-term health outcomes, especially for chronic conditions like asthma or rheumatoid arthritis?
We talked a little bit about patient costs and adherence for biologics, but also for expensive small molecule medications. We see that all the time where patients aren't picking up their medications or delaying treatment because of these costs. If we're talking specifically about asthma, rheumatoid arthritis, or even other chronic conditions that have to be prevented and not just treated, then it's important for the patient to continuously be on the preventative medication. If the copay, coinsurance, or if they even don't have insurance, cash price is prohibitive to the patient. They're not going to pick it up. They're not going to be on this medication. And then they lose that preventative advantage, which leads to acute attacks, which leads to increased hospitalizations, and leads to an increase in the overall cost of healthcare. So if we can measure what these long-term costs are of the chronic conditions on a biosimilar, a lower alternative, versus the original medication that the patient was on, we can track the savings difference, not just of pure cost of one versus the other, but the total cost savings for the entire patient's long-term healthcare costs. And if we compare those two down the road, I think we'll see an even larger amount of savings than we predict just from the simple calculation of the biologic minus the biosimilar cost.
So how could AI and automation play a critical role in increasing biosimilar prescriptions and closing the affordability gap for patients who rely on biologic treatments?
Yeah, AI, again, it can provide a lot of potential solutions. The potential seems to be sort of unlimited with AI. Where can we actually utilize it? And what are the roads we can go down to solve some of these problems? So AI can take a large amount of data, and it can analyze that data, and it can give us recommendations that we maybe potentially couldn't have seen if we were just viewing the data ourselves. One of the things we're looking at is biologic and biosimilar fill rates and comparing the difference between how frequently a biologic is getting filled and picked up by the patient versus a biosimilar getting filled and picked up by the patient. Then we can utilize AI to compare those statistics to see if there's a difference between adherence, like we talked about before. Are patients more adherent on a biosimilar? Are patients more adherent on a biologic? And that gives us insights into potential issues that we can then solve for, again, utilizing AI since it is such a powerful tool.
How can we better align biosimilar adoption with patient needs, both in terms of cost and clinical outcomes? What innovative approaches could be used to ensure patients feel confident in switching to biosimilars, particularly when originator products are still the dominant product in the market?
Yeah, we do still see that also. The original medication does sometimes still dominate the market, even with multiple biosimilars out there. I think one of the ways that we need to improve adoption is around education. And so that includes education for prescribers, pharmacists, patients all across the board. And so if we can use innovation to look at how we're providing that education to the different parties, different people involved, and we're looking at solutions to get the education in front of the prescriber mainly right now, how do we educate the prescriber not only about what biosimilars are out there, which ones are available, which ones have been manufactured, and they can prescribe it, and the patient can actually go pick it up at the pharmacy. The manufacturing issues can sometimes be a problem. And then after we've educated them, we can track all of that data again to see, has this improved? Has it not? We also want to educate the pharmacist. So there are different state laws around what biosimilars can be interchanged, which ones have to be communicated back to a provider. And there's some barriers there that we can help remove around education. But how do you get that education to all of the different pharmacies, to all of the different pharmacists? What does that look like in the future? Because now I think we are lacking in that. So how do we attack providing education through different avenues, whether it's websites, whether it's getting in front of them with podcasts? Like, how do we get that information to pharmacists, prescribers, and then also patients? Patients want this information as well. So what's the best way to figure out how to get that education in front of the people so that they understand what we're trying to do, why we're trying to do it, and how it's helpful for everyone involved?
What shifts in healthcare policy or clinical practice would make the biggest impact, in your opinion, on the biosimilar industry in the next 5 years? Especially since we just passed the 10-year anniversary of the first FDA biosimilar approval.
Well, that's awesome. I actually didn't know that. That's great. So I think the two changes we'll most likely see that will truly impact biosimilar adoption in the industry is PBMs utilizing biosimilars and adding them to their formularies. And then again, as I mentioned, improving education, but this time specifically around patient education. So there's an article in the American Journal of Managed Care last October that talks about this question a little bit, and it identified two main pieces of this that it is a misalignment of incentives that the PBM see due to these complex reimbursement structures. So PBMs are very complex in how they get paid and how they calculate for lowest net cost. And so one of these tools that they use is a rebate. And sometimes the rebates can sort of cloud which one is the lowest net cost. So if they have a rebate and it gets reduced by a biosimilar, that sometimes looks pretty bad on their end. And so if we can prevent that reduction in a rebate by moving someone to a biosimilar or showing that it is a lower net cost altogether, the biosimilar itself is less expensive than the biologic that they were originally on, then the PBMs will start to adopt biosimilars more. So a focus more on total net cost versus rebate structure. They also found that patient and provider education is the biggest factor, the biggest barrier we have after PBM adoption. And so if we can focus on why patients would not want to switch to a biosimilar, why patients think biosimilars, they may have misconceptions about what a biosimilar even is, and provide answers to these questions, then we can fill the gap of knowledge there and hopefully change the discussion around biosimilars with patients.
Given the concern about the US economy and the implementation of tariffs on all goods from certain nations, do you think biosimilars and generics will be affected by these policies? And what should patients know about current drug supply challenges?
Great question, and the timing of it is appropriate. I think medication costs are rising for various factors. It's hard to speculate what's going to happen in the future with medication costs, but we already know this is a problem. Medication costs are being passed to the patient, and that's something that we don't want to see. So one thing that we can do is try to make sure that the cost that gets passed on to the patient is the least possible. Again, biosimilars typically have very low cost compared to their original biologics. So switching to a biosimilar would hopefully offset some of these costs. In terms of shortages, one thing that we look at is the FDA has a great website on shortages. They're always tracking new shortages, locations, and they'll even give you an estimated date of when that shortage will end. So we track all of that to make sure that if we're giving a recommendation on an alternative, it's available in the market. Then I think in terms of what patients should know about that is that if there is a shortage, there is likely an alternative that they can use until that shortage subsides. So typically shortages last a few months, maybe even a year sometimes, but they should be asking their prescriber for an alternative, not just stopping the medication they're on because there is a shortage. There are typically alternatives that they can take, discuss it with the pharmacist, discuss it with a prescriber, and they can switch you to a different alternative until that medication becomes available again.
With the FDA approving more biosimilars each year and more payers starting to embrace biosimilars on their formularies, what do you predict will be key drivers for expanding biosimilar adoption in the future?
I think cost savings is always going to be the key driver. It is in a lot of industries, and it's no different in healthcare. Is keeping costs down is what will drive medication adoption. I expect that biosimilars are going to continue to be more and more affordable. There's actually multiple biosimilars for medications, so that you will see biosimilars competing with each other. And so that competition always lowers price. And so if we have, you take Humira, for example, there are 10 different biosimilars for Humira, and a PBM or a health plan will typically pick a few to put on formulary, and they're going to select the ones that are the lowest cost, most likely. And so that natural competition between biosimilars and with the biologic will lower prices more and more. And that's what we want to see.
How can increased biosimilar adoption and subsequent savings in certain therapeutic areas be reinvested to expand access to in-demand originator biologics like GLP-1 agonists, gene therapies, and innovative cancer treatments?
It's an interesting question. I think the goal of almost everyone involved is to reduce payment to increase savings. And so we mainly have discussed so far patient savings, which is a big focus because we want the patient to save money to be able to get the medication. But if we also focus on PBM and health plan savings, then we'll see that from biosimilar adoption. They'll be able to use the savings elsewhere. They could pass it on to the patient, or they could also utilize that savings to improve their other programs. You mentioned GLP-1s. We know those are expensive. That's another area where there needs to be some way to reduce GLP-1 costs. And if PBMs or health plans can create programs around reducing those costs for not only biologics, biosimilars, but for the other expensive medication areas, then we'll see a total reduction in healthcare costs. And they can apply that to the more expensive areas to try to reduce those as well.
And lastly, Josh, do you have any concluding thoughts?
No, I think that the main focus is around total cost savings with biosimilars, and then how they are beneficial for pharmacists, providers, patients, most importantly, and then also PBMs and health plans. And this movement towards biosimilars is a great thing, I think, right now with healthcare costs getting so expensive. This is one way that we can drive down those costs, especially for complex indications and complex medications. So I think right now we're in a great area where we can affect a lot of things that are happening and help a lot of people out by trying to control some of these costs.
Well, Josh, thank you for sharing your insights with us. And thank you to our listeners for tuning into this episode of Not So Different. You can find additional information on everything we discussed in the show notes. And until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.